This episode of The Grape Nation is brought to you by Vivino. Discover and buy wines wherever you are. Visit vivino.com/heritage to stock up.
Hey, this is Kat, Communications Director of HRN, here with a preview of Episode 2 of Meat and 3. This week, we're talking pork. We'll learn the best way to make a BLT.
I don't think I've ever successfully made a BLT just because I eat the bacon before any other part.
How pitmasters and restaurateurs are helping put small-scale pig farmers back to work in Alabama.
It's all about money. That's the bottom line.
What pork has to do with economics?
Farmers could be particularly affected by China's threat to levy its own tariffs on pork and soybeans.
And with government.
Basically, all of politics is pork at this point.
So tune in on Friday afternoon for your weekly serving of Meat and Three, and make sure you subscribe to be the first to know when new episodes air.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Sam Anderson, Beverage Director at Mission Chinese Food in New York. We'll talk to Sam about natural wines, what pairs with spicy Asian, running marathons, and a lot more. My man Sam did me a solid. He left LA last night and got on a 6 a.m. flight to be on the show. He tried to dodge me, but he did the right thing. I'm your host, Sam Benrubi. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. California-born and current Brooklyn resident. Still in Brooklyn?
Yes, sir.
Brooklyn resident Sam Anderson innovated at some of New York's coolest bars, including Freeman's, Hotel Del Mano, Gold Bar, and Salvation Taco before landing at Danny Bowine's Mission Chinese Food on the Lower East Side of New York. Sam is the beverage director at Mission and oversees wine, beer, spirits, and tea.
Don't forget the tea.
Sam also happens to be a very serious marathoner, and towards the end of the show, we're going to talk about that a little. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Again, I thank you for getting up early and getting on the plane and coming on the show. You and I booked this almost months ago.
Like I said, it kept me out of trouble last night.
Right.
Having to get up at 3:45 in the morning. It either kept me out of trouble or could have put me even in more trouble than...
Right. So you're here and you're out of trouble. All right. I want to give our audience, our listeners, a little context and a little background on who you are. I think you have a pretty crazy past. I think we'll have fun kind of taking you to current. So give us a quick background about your journey in life and in wine and in spirits that got you to where you are currently, which is at Mission.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned I was born in California, which is true. I was born to parents who were...
This part's crazy. You got to tell me this part.
They were post-hippies, and there was... quite a cult movement in Southern California that was sort of, it started at the community colleges and the state colleges and really was like a spiritual draw for a lot of folks coming out of the hippie movement. And my parents were definitely in that. And, you know, one thing leads to another and you think you're in a spiritual movement and the next thing you know, it's a full blown cult with 5,000 people in it and, you're raising kids in it. And I happen to be one of those kids. There was nothing, malicious in this cult. It just was very cut off from society and had a very doomsday sort of perspective on life. And, around age 16 or so, I started reading and really started discovering that perhaps this perspective was not how I saw the world.
Probably.
And yeah. And so I stepped away from that group, though I hadn't really ever chosen to be part of it, and started my own path. And that path led ultimately through college. I worked all kinds of crazy jobs, working in like a newspaper packaging plant and roofing houses and painting houses. And I ended up putting myself through college through the cafe world, making coffee. And I was studying poetry composition, and that's what I got my degree in. And then I moved to New York and sort of just...
Perfect background.
Yeah. Perfect. And so when I moved to New York, my background was in coffee, and I worked at Cafe Grumpy for a bit before I realized that a 5 a.m. wake-up call did not support my party life. So I would end up, you know, not sleeping and then going to work and just being literally Mr. Grumpy at Cafe Grumpy. And so I transitioned to more of a work life that would support my nightlife. And that was working first and foremost at Freeman's cool as a barback. Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, 10 years ago, Freeman's was the absolute epicenter of the craft cocktail revolution. And I met Gene Adamson there. I met Lynette Marrero there. I met Jana Wolfson there. I met Jim Kearns and Greg Ramirez. Those are all my...
Those are the guys that were doing it, right?
Absolutely. Some of the best bartenders in the city.
They were less then than now. So those guys...
Yeah. They were deified almost.
Right.
And I was a barback for them, and I learned my trade from those people, and I owe them so much of my success. For that really... like really outsized mentorship that I got from day one. So then I started kind of branching off onto my own, and I helped. I didn't open Hotel Del Monte. I was there the first like 6 or 8 months or so after it opened, and that cocktail bar was very much so a pioneer in Brooklyn craft cocktail bartending. And just really creating as well, not just making beautiful drinks, but really creating energy in a room. And, you know, when you walk into Hotel Del Monte, even to this day, there's still just there. This like luxurious, like poetic, like energy to it. And I mean, even at that time, that didn't really exist that way. This like very sort of... how do I put it? There's just this very sort of, there was just this luxury kind of feel to it in that neighborhood. And I was the head bartender there for 3 years or so. And, a lot of the cocktails that I came up with back then are still on the menu, which is really fun. And so from there, I started doing consulting on other cocktail bars. And really, I worked for... I did a number of my own projects, worked for some other famous chefs, including April Bloomfield, and ended up picking up the phone, and it was Danny Bowen and Mission Chinese who were calling me at some point.
Did you not say Ken Friedman on purpose?
I did not, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Danny picks up the phone.
Yeah. And so this was about 4 years ago, and he and I knew that I was ready for change at that point.
Did you have any idea how he got to you?
It was actually at that time through his executive chef, Angela Demiuga, who was working for the company at that time. She found out about me through Gene Adamson, and then I knew I had dined at Mission Chinese on the Lower East Side on Orchard,
the first
Orchard
location.
Street, the first, yeah, Orchard, and, yeah, and I was, you know, it was a hazy glory,
yeah,
and I knew that there was going to be quite a lot of energy and opportunity for me at this opening, I came on board full time at that point. Strictly,
what year was that? That was 4 years ago.
Yeah, 2015. Yeah, so. I started as just the cocktail director, and that role quickly developed into like assistant general manager, and then I was general manager and beverage director for a year.
Was anyone doing wine or anything, or was just small enough?
Well, we had some help at the beginning from the esteemed and wildly talented Bill Fitch. And he kind of started us out with a list, and then, you know, we, after a couple of months, had to sort of maintain it from in-house. And that's sort of when I saw an opportunity to diversify myself, even though I had no real oversight. And yet I am very comfortable as an autodidact. That's really where I feel like I thrive. I don't think I would do well at WSET.
Tell people what an autodidact is.
Autodidact is one who teaches themselves.
Self-taught.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I'm very much a self-taught runner. I'm a self-taught.
So you taught yourself wine. So let
well,
me
I would say that I didn't go to WSET.
No, or you didn't go the formal.
Yeah, I didn't go the formal route. Yeah,
you kind of sponged it.
Yeah, yeah. From my reps, I happen to have a couple of folks in my life who are very Carla Rozewski, Alex Allen, Tess Drumheller. These are people who are very good friends of mine who were very good about putting me on the right path. So,
I want to get to the wine thing, but before that, you know, you were kind of a booze guy who crafted innovative cocktails. You know, like you said, you worked with some great mentors, and then, you know, you went on and started doing your own thing. This whole cocktail spirits mixology thing is huge. You know, I mean, has it changed much since you jumped into it? Has it gotten better? Has it calmed down? Has it gotten crazier?
I think all of the above.
And it's in more places.
Yeah. I think you've definitely seen the standard across the industry has definitely been raised, where like the expectations are just that everyone has a cocktail program, which is great. I think that there is a certain, you know, the cocktail programs are very important to the restaurant experience and to the bottom line as well. For me, after 8 or 9 years of just really steadily doing that, I found that it wasn't quite speaking to me the same way that it did years ago. And that could have just been out of there being like, you know, just the familiarity. But it also, I think once I started to really understand how alive wine is and how alive the wine that I love is in the bottle, even, it really started to cast the cocktail world in a very different light for me, in that it just felt a bit inert.
Right.
In that, you know, spirits are distilled and there's kind of like this end to that life cycle. And I still really appreciate a great cocktail.
Right.
I really appreciate, and I think it's that focus on the recipe. And I started to feel as though there was almost like this tyranny of the recipe after a while, where people, I would just do something like free form that I really enjoyed, and then I would immediately have to like turn it into a recipe. And there's this sort of, I don't know, there's this like kind of linear quality to it that I just, after a while, was very, wore tired of it. You know, the cocktail world is very intense. It's great. People are doing really amazing things, and
we actually do a couple of cocktail shows.
Yeah
That's serious.
Yeah.
So you alluded to it, but get deeper into it for me. So that's when you became more interested in wine, you know, when you, I wouldn't say came to the end of the cocktail thing, but had a different revelation and wanted to move on. And you said a word, and I think you're an evangelist and it's important to you: natural wines. I think, you know, that part, not just wine, but...
Yeah.
So when was that, when the wine thing kind of was clear to you?
Yeah. You know, I've gone back and thought about this a lot, because I think it's important to sort of see these signposts in one's own life and see then how it translates into your behavior, your career. And it really had a lot to do with the change in my personal life, wherein I'm going to be 5 years now in July. I will not have smoked a cigarette in 5 years. And I started running marathons very, very passionately, or some people would say aggressively, or it's a very big part of my life. And
yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So there was this definite switch to what, you know, if I'm going to drink, like, what are the things that make me, like,
so that
feel
whole
good?
Vibe yeah. kind of pointed you that
yeah.
way.
And, yeah. And I think that a big switch for me was I as I have spent so much time outdoors training, I have really realized my own exposure to the world, the natural world. You know, if you're out running for 2 hours, you know, you are out subject to the earth in whatever happens during that 2 hours of time. And I really started to feel more connected with the natural world as a result. And wine could not be more, if you're in the confines of a restaurant on a nightly basis, wine is the thing that is a direct correspondence to the natural world. And therefore, you know, I have always been drawn to wines that have been as reflective of that life.
Right.
And I think that does correspond with a certain sort of methodology in the farm, and I think it corresponds with a certain methodology in the cellar as well. So, you know, this is all very, I think it's very free associative and it's very personal, but yes, it does translate to a certain style of wine that I appreciate.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about that. So right here in Brooklyn, and I would go outside of Brooklyn to the Lower East Side.
Yes.
Where Mission is. I would pretty much say these are areas that are ground zero for natural wines. Yeah. I mean, you would agree with me, right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about natural wines. How do you, Sam Anderson, how do you define natural wines? You kind of alluded to the field and in the cellar, but just, you know, a natural wine to you is?
Well, I don't feel qualified to
I'm asking you your feelings.
My feeling about it. So I visited the very first vineyard I visited was Jeff Cotelou in Puymaison in Languedoc, and it was a very striking experience because you know, you have a lot of conventional growing taking place there, and then you have his vineyards, which are all, you know, biodynamically farmed. You have just great integration of naturally occurring or just, like, you know, indigenous, like, herbs and there's almost this herbs and plants and trees and figs and there's
alive.
Bats flying around. Yeah. There's cicadas. I mean, you're in his fields and it's overwhelming. It's loud. It's like almost chaotic. And then you you look across the road to the conventionally grown vineyards, and it's just inert and
it's crazy,
and
right?
Yeah, and that, so that's where it really
that's
starts.
That's a great description.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's alive.
And I remember driving along with Jeff in his Jeep, and he was just like, he's an intense guy. He's just like screaming at the vineyards, like they were characters in his life, you know? And they are. And on one, he's like screaming at the conventional vineyards. He's like, no life, no life. And then he's like, look over at my fields, life. And, you know, that really stuck with me. And so I think that, definitely.
You answered the question with a story.
And
the story is a good representation of what natural wines
are. Right.
They're very much alive.
Yeah.
And they're farmed and they're people that are passionate.
Yeah.
To sum up for you.
Yeah. And I that's not to say that there are not wines that are great that are, you know, if maybe there are pesticides in use, or maybe they're not strictly following the lunar calendar, and maybe there is sulfur that is used. That's not to say that there are not wines that are not, you know, great.
Right.
It's just that
it doesn't have to be 100%.
No. It's just more that we can choose whatever course we like to sort of take in our lives and our careers, and like that's just sort of the you know, where my career crosses over in the Venn diagram with the wine world, and those are the things that I really care about. Is a lot of I really like to feel a very clear clear correspondence with the life cycle, the experience of the grower and the grapes and a place and
right, so let's get specific. Mm-hmm. So let's you have to sit there and put a list together. It changes. You know, you built it during your time there. So let's get specific in the sense of things that you like, you've come across. So talk to me, and we can go any directions, regions, producers, types of wines, grapes that, you know, have caught your attention, that you've fallen in love with, stayed in love with. You know, what should we be drinking?
Well, I think to preface that, for a restaurant like Mission Chinese, there is no wine production culture in China. It's a buying culture for sure. But in Southeast Asia as well,
Not going regional.
Right. Yeah. So, and that for me, when I was working on the list for the very first time, was absolutely daunting, because here I am working on a wine list, trying to cobble this thing together out of, you know, teaching myself. And I have no, you know, there's no culinary tradition that corresponds with a wine culture that I can just, like, you know, so I would Google, you know, what, you know, Sichuan or Chinese food, like what wine pair well, you know, and it's like a pretty standard, like, you know, Riesling, Gewürz, Drimmener, Grüner Veltliner, like, you know, those are excellent pairings. But I started to become very interested in places that were outside of, like, the sort of typical
spicy
Sichuan pairing, like, sort of so cycle. Yeah.
What do you
think? I'm really crazy about the Jura. I really love those wines. They're just so electric. I just really love a lot of the producers who are there.
Give me a couple of producers.
Tissot, obviously Overnoy.
Hard to get.
Yeah, Ganavat. These are super hard to get.
Alice Bouveau. And Tissot you can get.
Yeah, yeah. Alice Bouveau, you can get her.
Ganavat's expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I really love, those are a couple of my favorites. There's some really great stuff in Alsace. Domaine Reach is really amazing. I love what Christian Binner is doing. But then...
what kind of grapes are they using in Alsace?
It'll usually be a Gewürztraminer, Silvaner. You're going to see some reds, like some Pinot Noir. You're going to see some Pinot Gris. I also have really been interested in American wines as well. I think that there's some really cool stuff going on in Mendocino and in the Willamette Valley.
Talk to me about some producers.
Yeah, Mendocino. Actually, the bottle I brought today was from Martha Stueman.
She was just in town, right?
Yeah, she was here 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I actually didn't get to meet up with her, but I really love what she's doing. She's working with primarily Italian varietals that are planted, Italian and French, south of France varietals. I also really love what Sam Bilbao is doing at Idlewild. I love what Evan Lewandowski is doing.
Right.
He is sourcing his grapes from the same areas, but then he's, you know, pressing them and then taking the fermenting must and packing it into polyethylene eggs and putting it in a U-Haul trailer and taking it back to Park City, Utah. I just saw him yesterday. I'm like, man, you're a genius.
That's funny.
You're awesome. Yeah. And then Willamette Valley, there's just, you know, I think that there's such a resonance with, you know, like that terroir resonates with so many other, like, really cool places, like, you know, some of the Italian islands and, just the volcanic nature of the soil really feels a bit like Etna.
In Willamette Valley?
I think there's definitely a little bit of it. Okay. Yeah.
But Italy's making some great.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm crazy about the Cantina Giordano wines. I'm really crazy about what Frank Cornelissen does.
Didn't you have somebody in the restaurant?
Yeah. So we did a dinner recently with Nico Shakatano from La Stopa. I am
cool label.
I absolutely adore the wines of La Stopa, that being Giulia Armani as the winemaker, and then Ilana Pantaleone is the owner of the estate. And then I also am really crazy about Elisabetta Foradori.
Spell.
Foradori?
Foradori.
Yeah.
I'll post everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because our listeners kind of love to
I'll go off
the show. But I'll list everything on our social media. Anything really out of the box or new? I mean, anything crazy?
Well, you know, the thing is, and to go back to this, the fact that Chinese food spice does not have, I got to create a roadmap of my own. And instead of being sort of motivated by a cultural sort of resonance between the wine list and the food, it really is about an energy. And I really use the idea of winemakers who are young at heart and who are sort of challenging themselves and who are, you know, using their intuition and who are, maybe they're 80 years old, but like they, you know, like I think
they're yelling at the crops.
Yeah. I think of Pierre Finals, who's, you know, he had a long career in the fashion world. And then he just called it and he was, cool. I don't know, I think he was in his 60s and he just decided to just take up winemaking, and he's making some of the most beautiful biodynamic expressions in Burgundy that I have tasted in a long time.
Really?
He's a Maison Belize.
B-E-L-L-E-S.
And Belize. Then another word, L-I-E-S.
Are they somewhat accessible? Or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because I'll definitely post that.
But definitely, the cool thing about having like no parameters is that you know, it actually like I have a very clear,
no parameters for your list. You mean
right? Like
to be a French because exactly. It's a French cuisine.
It's about generally wines that have a good amount of acid, wines that are very sort of like have a bit of a lighter touch yet have a lot to say at the same time, and that's tough, you know, because a lot of thinner skin grapes perhaps might not have the sort of like gravitas to pair with, Mission Chinese wings, you know.
Right.
So it has to be
tough for challenge.
It's a really tough balance. Yeah, but
do you one of the things that comes up with natural wines, and you've been around it enough, is consistency and quality. I guess like anything, that'll vary. But I think natural wines gets a knock, you know, that it's the quality's not great. It's inconsistent from vintage to vintage, which it should be. I mean, is that an issue? Do you think of it that way? Or
I think we're all very aware of that issue. And I feel as though the more that there is focus on the fruit and the farming of that fruit, the more consistent the wine is. And, I definitely have no issues if I feel as though there's a wine is out of whack, like I won't buy it.
Right.
Even if it's one of my favorite producers or.
So every now and then a favorite producer.
Absolutely.
Wine,
yeah, yeah.
Right.
And we you know, it, we, it's just about being honest with ourselves about it. And I don't know. I'm not enough of an expert to weigh in and to say, well, if that producer that year would have, you know, sulfured their vineyard or added more sulfur at bottling, like things would have been any different. You know, like where is that modicum? Like where is that line?
I definitely it's like am anything just, else.
I'm honest with if I taste a bottle that's got, you know, mouse on it, I mean, I'm probably, if it's aggressive, I'm probably not going to buy it. If it's just like a touch, like I find that to be almost reassuring in a way, if there's just like a slight amount of mouse on the finish or some touch of volatility at opening, like I'm okay with that.
Do you feel it's harder to curate a smaller list because you have to really narrow it down than a larger list. I had Cedric Nicaise. He's the wine director at 11 Madison.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he could buy whatever he wants.
Sure.
You know, so he says that's easy. He sort of said to me, I don't want Sam Anderson's job. How do you, he didn't say Sam specifically, but he was definitely alluding, you know, to the type of list that you have to, you know, figure out. Does that frustrate you sometimes, or you could get everything on the page?
I have about 150 bottles, more or less, right now.
Rotates?
Yeah, and the list changes a lot.
And you're not frustrated with the 150? That works?
I'm good at that number right now. There's always things that I want to buy.
Right.
There's, you know, it's, but I know that for the, so, you know, for the capacity of the dining experience at Mission Chinese, which, let's be real, on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at 9 o'clock, it is, I mean, it is freewheeling to say the least, and borders on like, I mean, it is a party.
You had a good adjective early. It was like hazy.
Hazy. Your
Friday at 9 is hazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a level of energy in that dining room that, you know, it is, let's just, it's not a contemplative wine drinking mood. But I'll tell you this much.
And you went from that scene to more contemplative, which is funny.
But I'll tell you this much, and this is the wave. I feel as though young people are coming into Mission Chinese. They're coming into Hemlock. They're coming into Wild Air. They're coming into these places, and they're like, give me some cool wine. And
I agree.
Like, I want to know. And there is this, like, turning of the focus to these places. And the more I know who my clientele is, and if I put these things in front of them, I'm like, you got to check this out. Like, I mean, they tell 10 of their friends. And so
they're listening to you.
Yeah. Too. And I think it's really about keeping it approachable on a price point for this new generation, this new wave. Because I'm very aware that the people who I'm teaching and training and tasting wine with in the restaurant are like, I'm kind of like the Lynette Marrero, the Jim Kearns 10 years ago,
right.
Except I'm teaching kids about wine.
You'll have an impact.
Exactly. So, you know, we're opening a new restaurant in Bushwick, and that's my focus
right
there. Yeah.
You get to do other mm-hmm. things there. All right. So let's talk about the wine list a little at Mission. You said there's about 150 different wines.
Yep.
I guess the obvious question is there's got to be a bunch that are either Rieslings or whatever. Mm-hmm. Tell me, you know, what it's made up of.
Well, I organize my list from light to full, not in body, but in complexity, whether that is wines that are maybe like they're lower alcohol content, but they're like got a lot of skin contact. Those are going to be to me like a more complex wine, and so I'll put that at the bottom of the list. Though it may be 10,
so that's
10%
a good definition for
alcohol.
Complexity.
Complexity.
The alcohol
yeah.
may be low, but because of the skin contact,
exactly.
There's a complexity and a nuance to it.
So and then toward the you know the higher like the lighter end, it's you know like. Like drinks like a glass of water, you know, Riesling sort of
right.
Like, so that's sort of, I organize it that way. And the list is made up of, so I have, a section of the list dedicated to, champagne, Pet Nat, Rosé. I have an entire
the
section.
The sparkling game has been raised in the list, right?
Yeah.
And it's very compatible with that type mm-hmm. of food.
Absolutely. And then I have a skin contact section. And a red and a white. And like I said, there's no regional specificity to, it's more a style. And
right.
I would say that because of the nature of the food, we definitely skew toward wines that are higher acid,
I was
lighter.
Just going to ask you, you're driven by the mm-hmm. type of food, mm-hmm. not by your whims or what's cool.
Yeah.
It's what makes sense. All right, so then let's ask the obvious question, mm-hmm. and you answered a little before, but you know, hit it harder for me here. What pairs best overall mm-hmm. with this cuisine? And with Danny, it's like psychedelic Sichuan. You know, it's not just, it's very spicy Chinese with some very innovative ingredients
yep.
and recipes.
So, I have really been skin contact and
Explain
Szechuan.
Explain to everyone what skin contact.
Yeah. So essentially, I think of skin contact as sort of the inverse of rosé, in so far that it's a white grapes are used and they are macerated on skins after they are crushed, sort of in the style.
They keep
of,
them on the skins exactly, for longer.
Exactly, and that's right. how you make a red wine. That's where the color comes right. from. That's where the structure comes
orange
from.
Orange wine,
exactly. Orange wine and skin contact are. You know, they're supposed to be synonymous. I think orange is misleading, but
right.
And then you know, like a rosé would be using red grapes and just not letting them sit on the skins for very long, if not at all. So you know, there's a long history of this style of wine dating back thousands of years, but in the last 20 to 30 years, it's really had a resurgence, really coming from the Friuli Venezia region of Italy, and also parts of Slovenia, Georgia. Yeah, and so that style of wine, I like to really focus on it at Mission Chinese because, like I said, you need wines that are refreshing and are cold, and that's usually great. We like to chill our reds across the board pretty much. But you also need to have this... you need to have this backbone. These wines need to have this like real sort of like, you know, they need to be able to sit at that table right. with the wings and with the pastrami and like
right.
we serve food banquet style. And so, you know, you don't get to course things out. Right. So you need to have wines that have acidity. They need to be able to speak with a really strong voice. They need to be refreshing and they need to be inherently weird too.
Right.
Because the Fits food in. Is too. You can't Fits have in, yeah. like, yeah. But that said, I do also really love a great like fine herb Riesling with the food. I really love like a nice green Gruner. Those so are all
Gruners,
really
Rieslings,
great. Yeah, yeah. like
kind of traditional.
Yeah, and it, you know, they all have their place, and usually that's something I parse out with a guest. Is are you looking for something funky? Are you looking for something
right.
clean and classic? Like, and sort of go from there.
Right. Mm-hmm. It makes total sense. All right, Sam, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk about something that's near and dear to you, and that's running and the impact it's had on your life. I want to subject you to our wine list, which is a bunch of questions about your wine preferences. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully we could pop a bottle of wine that you brought in. We could share it with Marissa and Gabriella and enjoy that. So we're talking to Sam Anderson from Mission Chinese. I'm sorry I didn't tell you earlier. Sam is our guest today, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Grape Nation on Heritage Radio. No secret that I like being that person who always has some great wine on hand. When I know I've got a few bottles hanging around the kitchen, I feel like I'm ready for anything. If anything is just because I never know when friends will drop by unannounced, or because it's even just a Monday. I also hate that last minute run to the store. Wine was never meant to be bought in a hurry. It's funny how we have so much patience growing the grapes, aging the wine, only to feel pressured when you're staring at the shelf. I use Vivino to scan and keep track of my favorites. But lately, I've been stocking up through their web store. They have the best prices and largest online wine inventory, but can also give you personalized recommendations based on bottles you've liked in the past. And I use their premium service for unlimited free shipping. That's an extra bottle's worth of savings on every order. Plus, they have a 30-day free trial. I just grab a few at a time and save them from when the right moment rolls around. You never know when that'll be. Visit vivino.com/grapenation to stock up. All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, Sam Anderson. Sam is the beverage director at Mission Chinese in New York. Danny Bowine's place. Is that the right way to pronounce Danny?
Bowen.
Bowen. Mm-hmm. Danny came to New York years ago and took the sort of Asian, spicy, Chinese food category by storm, and he's still hitting it pretty hard. And we've been talking to Sam about, you know, what he's doing there and wines that pair. So Sam's a cover boy. Guys, did you know that? Sam was on the cover of the May Runner's World. That was last month, right?
Yeah.
So Sam has kind of a life-changing story. You know, it's nice when you talk about wine and the nightlife and the hazy environment, you know, at a mission, you know, how somebody was changed by something. So you talked about it earlier quickly, but, you know, now we'll kind of get into it deeper, how you got involved with running, why, and, you know, how did it change everything? And from what I see, you know, because I've been following you on Instagram, you know, doing a little research for this show, kind of obsessed.
I'm obsessed.
Yeah. So I'm tell possessed. Me how all this happened.
Yeah, I mean, I started running about 5 years ago. I was always pretty athletic when I was a kid, but, you know, I spent, you know, 12 years partying very hard.
That's part of the why. I mean, why you started running. Talk about, you know, you were a smoker, you said.
Yeah, I would smoke. Like, I mean, I was a chain smoker, essentially. I probably drank, I don't know, when I was bartending, you know, it was not uncommon to have like 10 to 12 drinks a day.
Drink of preference or different stuff?
Tequila, beer.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I was a rock and roll musician.
Okay.
I was working in Williamsburg. Like, it was just the whole thing.
You were
I was living that life. Yeah. 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 I was in it. I started running about 4.5 years ago, and
did one thing or somebody, like, you know, influence you?
Well, it was a combination of what really, like, wanting to just change my life, and I had a breakup that was really rough, and I knew that I just hit like a breaking point, I think, and I just knew that I needed to like, it was going to go one way or the other. So I started a physical practice. I quit smoking, which was a really long process for me.
Cold turkey?
Ultimately, yes, but it was in conjunction with starting to run. But I tried everything. I tried hypnosis. I tried the patch. I tried the gum. I tried Chantix. I tried, you know, everything. Cool. And really the thing that actually worked was replacing the thrill that I got from getting, you know, having like a fix, a nicotine fix, from replacing that with, you know, something that was more powerful and longer lasting, which was, you know, like a sense of, you know, deep satisfaction with oneself and one's body, and just like the sort of spiritual practice of that every day really started to sink in. And I ran. I woke up one day and I was like, I want to run the New York City Marathon. And I think this was like September, just to like kick myself in the ass and like, you know, get it going.
I mean, a month before?
No. So it would have been the next year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I looked up how to do that. And basically the New York Road Runners Association has this 9+1 program. And literally the first race was a 10 miler in the Bronx in like 3 days, like the last 9 races of the year. And I ran it, and then I ran the next 8. And
so
then,
if you committed to the Road Runners, those 9 races,
then you
and
qualify.
The one was you volunteer for something, that automatically gets you into.
Exactly. And I was battling heartbreak. I was battling alcoholism at this time, but it was like the thing that like really got me through it. And
you were a mess.
Yeah. And I remember I was actually the very last thing I had to do to fulfill, to get it, to qualify for the marathon was my volunteer event. And that was actually the very last race of the year in Central Park on New Year's Eve.
And you had to be there.
Oh, yeah. I had to be there. It was brutally cold. And I had to basically check bags in at midnight, and I was not partying with my friends.
I was going to say you were mildly or peripherally in the party mode at that point.
Yeah,
right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and I remember going to the like they started the race and I was like doing the bag check, and I went up to the porta potty, and I'm standing in the porta potty taking a leak, and I hear the countdown for the new year.
In a porta potty.
And I'm literally in a porta potty taking
it's
a leak
romantic.
All alone. No, it's very romantic.
It was life changing.
I'll never forget that. Yeah. And so I ran my first marathon that following year. I ran it in 3 hours and 5 minutes. I just PR'd this past month in, it means personal record, but I've been training. I run about 80 to 90 miles a week during a training cycle. I ran my most recent marathon in 2 hours and 54 minutes, which I'm 36 years old. I'm pretty happy with that time. Yeah. So
you were in Oregon and weren't you in Mexico?
I did some training in Mexico. Yeah.
Right.
It was kind of on vacation, but I will be running the Berlin Marathon in the fall, possibly New York as well.
Tell everyone why you may not be running New York.
Why? I don't know.
Didn't you forget to put the application in?
Oh, I would probably be doing that to raise money for a charity,
right.
of which I'm not sure which one that would be yet, but yeah.
So you're running... What'd you say, 70, 80 miles a week? So that
takes
up a big chunk of
90.
Your, you know, that's a discipline. That takes you away from a lot of the distractions and all that. Right?
Yeah, I generally, during the week, I don't drink at all. Monday through Friday, I really focus on my training. It's usually about 2 hours every morning of, like, you know, the whole process of you know, what you know, it's average about 12 to, you know, 13 miles a day.
Where do you run? Morning.
I do a lot of my training in Prospect Park. I like to run over the bridges. Just depends how long the race, the training is. I train with a team, called Black Roses NYC. We do a lot of training like in the track sometimes, you know, it just kind of depends, but
does anybody in Black Rose that runs not have a tattoo?
That's a good question.
All right, I'll join next week.
Yeah,
I'll be the outlier. Okay, I don't have one yet. Don't you get a sense? I think you've talked about this, and it's one of the cool things. You literally, there's this euphoria after running. I mean, there's a physical, emotional, mental thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an important part of it all, isn't it?
Yeah, that comes and goes. You know, some days are really hard. Some days are euphoric. And yet, it's not about those, you know, no feeling is final. And it's not about chasing those sort of like intervals. It's about the larger state of contentedness that
right.
I get from the practice. It is an athletic endeavor, but for me it really is a practice that has great impact on how I relate to other people. I find that running brings me a lot of joy from deep inside, and I can't fake that. And it really is going through the body in order to really kind of have like a harmonious relationship with oneself and like have an inner life.
So
it affects my work life too. You know, like I'm
everything in a good way.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm a little tired. You know, I'll have to run after doing, or I'll have to work after doing like a 20 miler or something. That's, you know, hanging by a thread by the end. But you know,
what's that race in the restaurant biz at midnight? It's kind of a cool thing you've participated in.
Oh, you know, it's called the Midnight Half Marathon.
Right.
It's not a restaurant thing. It's more,
not an industry thing.
It's
a
my
city
friend,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's my friend Joe DiNoto. He's a very, very good friend of mine. He does these races that are kind of like they very much centered around the Lower East Side. They go over bridges. They're unsanctioned. They're very wild.
Pretty good crowd though.
Yeah.
Nice.
A lot of people who are sort of like maybe a little bit more on the margins, like, you know,
right.
Yeah.
Like you were before you started.
Yeah, maybe.
Big commitment time-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big commitment physically, mm-hmm. you know, toll and all that. You got to stay, you know, on the game. Is this something you see not stopping? I mean, can you tire from this? Do you want to take a break or what do you think? It's hard to say.
I see this as a life long practice that
right.
I see old dudes running on the East River with white hair and you know, the long droopy mustache and the sweat shorts, and I'm like, well, that's me in 30 years.
Nice. That's what I was hoping to hear.
Yeah, it's not a short sort of sighted thing for me. Good. You know, if I were to have some major health issues.
Well, yeah,
you know,
there's potential distractions, but I mean, you're committed to it. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah, I actually don't quite feel like myself on the days that I don't run. So
that proves it all.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to move on to our wine list. I got a bunch of questions that I want to ask you. And even though you run 70, 80 miles a week, I don't know where the hell or who you're running from, but whatever. The wine list is a bunch of questions we ask all our guests just to get a sense, you know, your preferences. You're around this, you know, people are interested in what you're doing. So the first question is, what are you drinking now? A lot of times it's seasonal. It's what you're tasting for the restaurant. Somebody turned you on. Is there something that you're drinking almost singularly now?
Nothing singular. I'm really stoked on these wines coming out of Adelaide Hills, Australia. Yoma is a probably one of the producers that I'm really digging. James Erskine is
Y O M A.
J A U M A. Yeah,
I was close.
Mm-hmm. His wines feel like, you know, it's a cooler climate. There's less extraction on the reds.
What kind of grapes are we talking about?
Chenin Blanc primarily, and Shiraz for the reds. Yeah, and he does some Semillon as well. Just some really cool blends. They feel like if you're, it's like almost like Loire Valley kind of crossed with like just a touch of like Central Coast California almost.
Cool.
They're it's like a sunny Loire. I really love some of his, I really love his Chenin Blancs. I think they have this really gorgeous touch. I've been really, like I said, I've been really getting into Italian stuff. I was really sort of centered around Loire Valley as like the first place that I really gravitated to, with, you know, just like the untold, numbers of amazing producers. And, I always come back to the Loire, and now I'm sort
it's of a favorite.
Like branching out to, you know, some of these Italian producers who are really interesting to me.
Give me one or two.
Again, Elisabetta Foradori is
Foradori
one.
Foradori again.
Okay. I really love, like I said, Cantina Giordino. I really love sort of what they're doing with indigenous grapes there, like Fiano and
neat.
Volpe de Rosso. And again, Willamette Valley is always on my mind. I just...
Give me your top of the list on that. If you had to buy one wine tomorrow. Or a couple. Not your traditional Pinot Noirs. We're not talking...
Well, there is a lot of Pinot Noir there, but I like sort of... some of the Italian stuff, some of the Italian varietals that are being worked with there. For instance, I really love what Holden is doing. He's got this Malvasia, skin contact with Malvasia, that's really stunning. He also does this beautiful Dolcetto.
Nice.
These are, you know...
Yeah, unusual for
unusual
that
from that area, yeah. And I love Bow and Arrow. I love what Scott Frank does with... You know, he's very much like... He and I are, you know... very much like similar perspective. He's like a Loire dude, and he's basically like doing like Loire via Willamette, which I think is super cool. I just hosted him for a glass pour takeover event 2 weeks ago, and
nice.
He's really dope hanging out with him.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll post that. Next question. Faye, you have a favorite wine and food pairing? I know it's a goofy question, but I'm always curious.
I'm gonna hold it down with the skin contact and Szechuan spice.
Okay, staying home on this one. I'm all right with that.
I think it's really a phenomenal pairing, and it really keeps me intrigued.
All right, give me one specific choice.
Okay. I really love Ariana Okapinti's Zabibo.
She was in town for the portfolio tasting.
Yes.
I think it was
in the last
Palana or something.
She's Bowler. With David Bowler.
Bowler. It yeah. was Bowler, mm-hmm. right. Okay.
So I really love that wine, SP68. It's just really floral. It's got this like kind of perceived candied, like jasmine-y sort of note, but then it's just like nice and dry and like
and it's
got
available,
some structure. It is available.
Which is nice. Mm-hmm. That's and, a good one.
That with like, I don't know, any of our spicy dishes is going to really...
All right,
cool.
So that's a good one. Mm-hmm. I know you've backed away from this through the years because mm-hmm. of your lifestyle, but do you have favorite wine restaurants and or bars? Places, you know, that the list, the vibe, mm-hmm. you know, the knowledge, the service, what's good? And we're not incriminating anyone by leaving people on or off the list. What's
yeah,
good?
Yeah, I'm a casual dude. You know, I want to be able to, like, feel like I can roll up in what I'm wearing and
so where's
you know.
That
I love Ops in Bushwick. I love Ops. I love Meta in Fort Greene.
Yeah,
I love that wine list. I love the food.
Great
there.
Food too. Yeah,
yeah, Negro's fire. Food is just amazing. And Henry and Chris have done a great job yeah. with that wine
Henry
list.
Henry was on the show about a year ago.
I will always love Hotel Del Mano. I think Alex Allen is just a genius and just like such a sweet, kind mentor for me. Anytime I have a really dumb question, he never makes me feel stupid. And he's just got he's just been like Hotel Del Mano has had one of the most brilliant undersung wine lists in the whole city.
Under is a good word. I think it's underappreciated. People don't talk about it more. It's there and it's doing it as well as anyone.
Yeah. I mean, his list is absolutely extraordinary.
Do you have a favorite all-time wine? Is there a wine that just resonated at some point that you put it on your fave list?
Well, I think that's always situational. It's really not about the I mean, yes, there is, for some people, there are wines that are better than others. But for me, I would say that after running my PR in Portland, or I'm sorry, in Eugene, having a bottle of Agropart 7 Cruz afterward in the bathtub might have been...
Okay, so that
moment.
Agropart 7 Cruz, yeah, incredible
that's
great
some,
environment,
that's some
accomplishment.
Champagne. Yeah.
So it's definitely, but that's a good choice anyway. But circumstantially, it's
yeah, great. It definitely added a layer in there.
That's a good answer.
But I could also have that bottle. It would be sublime if I was on the A train headed out to Broadway Junction. I don't know if that experience would, you know, if I was drinking it out of a bag, I don't know if that experience would be quite the same.
Totally get it.
So, yeah.
All right, we have one more question, and we got to get done in about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I want to just taste the wine and get your take on it and have you tell everybody what you brought. Last question, and I always like to ask people in the business, best wine retail around $15. My kids are in their 20s. Yep. They want to bring good wines. They don't want to spend a ton, but they don't want to look like dopes and bring, you know. So red and white. You can go category. You can go maker. You can go region. Like, for instance, Muscadet, Loire, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Give me your white. Give me your red.
I'm going to say for red, I'm going to go OG on this one because this was really the first wine that, like, I remember tasting at Hotel Del Mano. Alex Allen poured it for me, and it's Christian Venier.
Spell Venier for me.
V-E-N-I-E-R.
Venier. Okay.
These bottles, you can probably get it for $15 or so wholesale. I don't know, case drop. I'd have to look at that. But it's in that neighborhood.
Okay.
Pinot Noir Gamay blend. Just
nice.
Beautiful summer fruit and black tea. And just so satisfying. I always find myself coming back to that wine. It really was maybe the first wine that I drank back in my, you know, like 8-9 years ago and was just like stopped in my tracks for 5 seconds. But I pour that by the glass at Mission Chinese now just as an homage to that. Just like the beauty of that wine and what a great value it is. On the white side, I really love, I think that Weiser Künstler is making absolutely beautiful organic Riesling. They're in the Mosel.
On the lower price?
Yeah. Yep. So you know, probably yeah, under, like $15 a Perfect. Bottle. That's wholesale.
Right, so it's going to be a few bucks more, but it's in that lower quality.
Yeah, it's like just honeysuckle, like lots of acidity, very light on its feet, but it has this like just haunting smokiness to it that's really amazing.
I'll definitely
too.
Post that. Mm-hmm. All right, those are good choices. We're going to wrap up. We only have a few minutes. I usually bring wine in. You offered to bring in wine. Mm-hmm. You brought in an interesting wine. Just give me a quick background on it. You said it was a Martha Stauman.
Yeah, Martha Stauman. She is definitely a favorite winemaker of mine. She's definitely one of these like young female producers who is really, to me, very important to have like on my list. Just I think she makes really beautiful wine, and it's very energetic wine. It's very young, youthful at heart.
So specifically, we're drinking.
Yeah. So this is the cuvée is called Post Flirtation. It's the white.
Nice name.
Yeah. So it's a blend of three grapes, Marsanne, Roussanne, and Muscat Blanc, and it's very sort of quaffable and summery and
interesting.
Yeah, it's
is this low acidity, low alcohol?
Yeah,
lower alcohol.
We would say this is glue style. Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah, very great for the weather heating up, and it's got quite a bit of density on the nose, and then it's just real refreshing and crisp on the palate, and I really like that.
Do you sell this by the bottle?
I sell this by the bottle.
Mm-hmm. How much ballpark?
$60.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about retail, if it's available, it's mm-hmm. half or something like that. So it's a good price point and all mm-hmm. of that. So that's the Martha Stauman
Post-flirtation. Yeah, white. The white. She has a red, too. So by the
so
same name.
Let's just do the quick vitals. Color, it's kind of a unfiltered golden yellow, right?
Mm-hmm. Straw-colored.
Straw.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go nose. What do you get? It's an interesting nose. I suck at this, but what are the two or three descriptors?
I get quite a bit of like lemon curd,
not lemon,
like a creamy lemon. I get quite a bit of like grassy, like lemon grassy notes underneath that, and some honeysuckle. See, maybe.
Yep.
Let's
go mouthfeel.
It's got a very interesting kind of waxy texture.
Yeah,
that I think is very cool.
Nice mouthfeel with that little.
And that's
wax
really coming from the Marsanne. That kind of like it really coats your palate. It's got some great acidity on the finish, really like keeps you coming back for the next sip.
Yep. Let's go taste descriptors. What are you getting on the palate?
Let's see. Let's go back in there.
Why are you laughing? Don't overthink it.
So yeah, there's this sort of like raw honey thing going on.
Yeah,
there's.
I was almost thinking a little beeswax or something.
Beeswax, that texture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of like almost like oxidized apple. Yeah, a bit of like Asian pear sort of vibe to it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a delicious wine. Mm-hmm. It's the Martha Stauman Post Flirtation. I thank you for bringing that in. That was a treat.
You should have a wing with it.
I will after the show. I don't want to eat.
You're
going to
taste
air.
An entirely different glass of wine.
I don't
want to
eat
a Mission Chinese wing.
I don't want to get chicken sauce on my wine glass. All right, we're going to wrap up. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation. That's where I'll post Sam's wine list answers. I'll post his recommendations. I'll post the wine we drank, the Martha Stauman. Also follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby. And now you can follow hashtags. So please follow the hashtag The Grape Nation. And on Twitter, reach us at BenRuby. Sam, where can we find two things? Where can we find Mission Chinese? Where can we follow Sam Anderson and his running adventures?
Mm-hmm. Mission Chinese is in the Lower East Side. at 171 East Broadway. We have a new location opening this summer.
About when? July, August, September? Go conservative here.
Let's say July.
Okay. So August 1st.
Yeah, off the Jefferson stop. And you can follow me at Sam on Instagram primarily. Sam, the number 4, NDERSON.
4 is like almost like an A.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's Sam Fornderson or whatever.
Sam Anderson, but the A is a number 4.
And when Mission Brooklyn opens, you're going to be doing a lot of FaceTime there, you think?
I will be at both restaurants. Yeah, okay. I have, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. Mm-hmm. I want to thank our guest, Sam Anderson. Sam is the beverage director at Mission Chinese in New York City, Lower East Side, and soon to be in our hood, mm-hmm. Bushwick. I want to thank our engineer. We got lucky today. We got Dave out there. And I want to thank everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Ben Ruby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.